This is John Ladley.
And Mark Cooper. Welcome to this special edition of the Rock Bottom Data Feed. It's hard to believe this is our 20th episode.
Yes, it is.
So we thought we'd do something a little different this time.
Good.
We thought we'd just have two blokes talking at a kitchen table.
Our subtitle for the episode.
Exactly.
What's the title of this episode?
The Fuss About Your Hosts.
Subtitle, two blokes talking at the kitchen table like every other podcast on the planet.
That's what we come to.
Which we do not want to do, by the way. So if you're ready, if you're reaching for the button to switch to SiriusXM, don't, because we are going to have lots of good data stuff in the pod today. But it just won't be the usual format, right?
That's right. So let's get it underway.
So first of all, you've been listening to us now, hopefully for 20 episodes, and sharing this with your friends and clicking and subscribing and all of that. But I think it's important to know a little bit more about who's bringing you this information. So let's start with you, Mark. A little bit of background that makes this two blokes at the table more interesting.
All right. Well, I will do my best. I'll start off with something that even many people who know me don't know about me, and that's that I kind of have a degree in chemistry. You see, my bachelor's is in computer science, but since Duke didn't award multiple majors, there's a note at the bottom of my transcript saying that this candidate has completed the requirements for a bachelor's of science in chemistry. And you see, my parents both are in the field. Both of them have doctorates in chemistry or microbiology, biology, and so I took chemistry classes just so I could understand what they were talking about at the dinner table. So then I went to UCLA for graduate school and got a master's and doctorate in computer science with a concentration in artificial intelligence. And, you know, I did neural networks and fuzzy logic and genetic algorithms. And it's kind of nice to see the subject coming back around again because, you know, it was hot back in the 90s. Then for the last couple of decades, it's all been on kind of a low simmer. So after that, I was at FedEx for 29 years doing data and analytics and enterprise architecture. And I started with the very beginning of the data warehouse project and continued with it through three different hardware and software platforms, cloud migration, had a lot of really interesting projects and saw a lot of change. Because that's the thing I like about analytics is I have a very low threshold of boredom. And you're always doing something different in this area. You're always working with different business areas, different teams, different types of data. And one of the things that I had the opportunity to do was to be on the Teradata Partners User Group Steering Committee. And I did that for 14 years. And its main job was planning and delivering the annual user group conference. And so over the years, I've read thousands of abstracts and more than 1,000 presentations. And that was one of my favorite parts. Because you really get a feel for what's trending, you know, what people are thinking about and concerned about and doing. And it's always the same pattern. You know, something new comes out and a few companies are talking about it, but nobody's doing it. And then the next year, a few are doing it and most are planning to do it. And then the next year, lots are doing it. And you see that over and over again, whether it's database features, dashboards, visualization, big data, cloud, of course. And really, the only exception was information management and data governance, those types of activities where in all that time, most companies never made it past the talking about it phase. And that's part of what we're trying to accomplish here, you know, getting companies to the doing it phase. And so after FedEx, I started the DataBrains, which is a consultancy that believes that a company's most valuable asset is its understanding of its data. So I do data strategy consulting, training, presentations. I have a weekly blog and a monthly Dataversity column. And of course, the Rock Bottom Data Feed. So that's a little bit about me. John, what about you?
Well, I have been in this industry for a long time, but I did not start in this industry. And listeners may know me from the books and consulting and speaking a lot and being kind of out there. Someone said I have a brand. I don't know if I do or not, but I think what's relevant for the pod, for my background, is that I didn't start in technology. I'm not a master's or a PhD in computer science or AI and all that. I have a undergraduate degree in accounting and economics. And I entered the world, first of all, because I couldn't get a job in accounting or economics, I entered the world as a disc jockey. So I actually have done professional radio, which I think you can probably hear in the pod, because we really strive for good quality, right? But I am trained as an accountant, and my first jobs professionally were financial in nature. And my approach to this is just another thing that businesses have to do. It isn't that special. I can tell you, one of the pods, I think the last episode where we finished off the Nick Guy arc, right? I mentioned a story in my monologue where I worked in a shop that data quality was the first thing we talked about. I also worked in a company that believed that the data stuff was so important that every accountant in the company was trained in COBOL. Look that up if you don't know what that is. And 2 weeks a month, I was a programmer writing reports, tweaking systems. We'd find a data entry issue, we'd fix it, we'd put in an edit. Then the other 2 weeks of the month, I'd be closing the books in the factory, going out on the floor, counting raw materials, counting finished products and things like that. And the philosophy there was, this is part of our business, this is seamless. And the organization I worked for was one of the first organizations to buy a mainframe and actually strive to automate things like that. So my background is different from a lot of people. And that's why what you're going to hear on our pod is sometimes a theme of, why are we thinking we're so damned important here? And we're really kind of full of ourselves once in a while in this business. And if I'm a CEO, because we like to address leadership as well, it's okay to challenge the data architect and say, hey, don't be such an asshole, okay? Talk to me in business. And if you can't, go back to your cubicle and read our annual report and then come back and talk to me. I don't think that's a big deal, but we got people running around going, ooh. So that's what I bring. That's my background. That's what I wanted to talk about. I mean, I went to a great little liberal arts school in Pennsylvania called Grove City College. No one's ever heard of it. And if you went there, you know that we got tremendously good practical stuff to do. And I've done the undergraduate courses. I've done postgraduate courses, things like that. But I prefer working and things like that, and doing fun stuff like this. So why don't we get started with the value added part of our program?
Why start now? All right, so let's go ahead and get into it. One of the themes that we've had throughout this first 20 episodes has been data is anthropology. And I think that that's been a recurring theme. I think it's going to continue to be a theme. Go into that a little bit more.
Yeah, it's important. I was talking to one of our peers in the industry, Mark and I. We'll do talks and things like that. And I was talking to someone else who has a book or two out and is a name in the industry. And he was critical of that. He said, that's a bit over the top. It's a bit esoteric. And I've heard that word before many years ago. When you have a movement, the data thing, and it has such trouble getting sticky, all right, data is still considered separate from other organizational things. And it's not. It's interwoven in the fabric of the organization. Do anything without someone in the room asking, well, what does the data say? There is nothing in the middle of the 21st century here where you can say, well, we don't need to look at the data. We're just going to go. All right. Is that anthropological? I mean, is that how people are going through their lives? Well, no, not quite. But that's expressed us the last 50 years or so. But we've moved into now where, of course, data organizations want to, quote unquote, monetize it, right? either make money off the data or save money from the data. You have the AI, Mark, we'll probably talk about that right today. There's these huge changes. And recently, more and more voices are saying that AI, which is data driven, has to be data driven, is going to start to radically shape workforces. And we are now getting into people saying, which I said 4 years ago, that we are looking at societal changes equivalent to the Industrial Revolution driven by AI. And now everyone's going, oh, yeah, I think you're right. So we need to put this perspective on what we do when we talk about data. If you're a CEO, you need to think about, look, a CEO has internally facing roles and externally facing roles. A CEO, like the reputation of the company and things like that, right? Well, how society perceives your organization is important, and how society perceives your organization will now be influenced by data. Why would you ignore it? All right. So I think for those that critique this thing of it's anthropological and we need to have a perspective of a sociological and a human understanding of this profession, and to call that lofty, I think get over yourselves. All right. The fact that you don't grasp it, the fact you don't understand it, doesn't mean it's not happening. I'm telling you, this is happening. 25 years ago, someone called me esoteric for saying business alignment was the most important factor to getting value from your data. You know, forget databases, forget the best BI tool, forget all the tools and stuff. You just had to be able to converse with the business. That's common language now. I was called publicly in a conference in the early 90s that I was being too esoteric and not realistic and not practical. So that's the thing. I mean, we've got China. China is nationalizing data policy. All right. There's a lot of articles out recently about, China's a different kind of government than we're used to in the West and things like that. But they are moving terrifically fast, that every citizen's move is recorded and digitized. All right. We have the recent, whatever side of the aisle you are, and I will not use adjectives that indicate good or bad, but, you know, being a good journalist, I will say that this Doge organization went through a lot of data and has left a lot of attention being spent on data of the citizens of the United States. And whether you think that's good or whether you think that's bad, let's just set that aside. But it's happening right now. And your everyday life and things and your opinions and everything are on the verge of being captured. So don't complain about China. Yep. This is happening here as oh, well. Yeah.
And I've had some firsthand experience with some of that. You know, I had a situation recently where some data about me had been captured incorrectly, and as a result, I was told that I have type 2 diabetes and a heart condition, which came as a surprise because I've never been diagnosed with either. And it turned out to be a data entry problem. Somebody types in the wrong code. And the thing that's so scary about that is that you'd never know it until it bites you, unless you actively go out and look at the data they have about you and you know, what's in my file that's being used to make decisions about me. And you know, let's make sure that it's correct.
Yeah, I mean, so
it touches all of us.
Yeah, and so we end up in these Faustian type situations because of data now. And I'm aviation is my hobby, and I was just reading an article about an airline pilot who has had to sue the FAA because someone put down the wrong code, and the medical examiner for this person said, "Oh, well, you have paranoid schizophrenia and severe cardiac issues, so you can no longer fly an airline." But it was the wrong codes. The guy's perfectly healthy, but he's been at it now for 4 years to get this unwound. That's a nightmare, and it is happening more and more and more. So if you're if you're a leader and you happen to have listened this far, all right, when you get into the office or whatever, and you can wedge in 15 minutes, start calling the chief data officer, the CIO, and ask them, what's the outward facing aspect of our organization related to data? And if they give you a blank stare, send us a note at counterthreadedproductions.com. we'll point you in some to some resources to help you. Okay.
From the external perspective, most of us are generally familiar with the messages that you get on websites. You know, you go to a website for the first time, the first thing it asks you is, will you allow it to collect data about you?
Of course.
And you just go, oh yeah, that's fine, whatever. But do you understand what data is being collected, what's being done with the data, how it's, and that's just the tip of the iceberg of what's being collected about people.
Yeah, the ethics of one nation that I know of, because I'm peripherally involved with it, is the Republic of Ireland. And they are starting to work on teaching or coming up with a curriculum or some legal framework or some guidance for all levels of society as to what example the Republic of Ireland should set in regards to the rights of individuals, people's data. It's a very cool project. It's also very difficult, a lot of very difficult discussions, which no one has ever talked about because it's anthropological. Yeah. Mark, you have done an awful lot of great dispatches. You've done a lot of stuff. Mark's on this pod because I asked him to be here because this dude's smart. So, Mark, it's your turn. All right. I know you've got some thoughts. What is it you would like to emphasize and drill in from our first 20 episodes
here? Yeah. Well, it's a similar situation where AI obviously is the hot thing. It's the biggest big new thing, I think, in most of our careers. And you've been seeing it, you know, every CEO, every CIO, CDO, you've got a list of AI projects. And you say, just, you know, I need me some AI. This company needs AI. We need to be with the leaders, with the cutting edge. And everybody's throwing something against the wall and hoping that it sticks. And the first thing I would say on that front, and you're starting to see it a lot more lately, is that companies are starting to recognize that the data is important and that data quality is important, data understanding is important. And it's not for its own sake. I mean, a lot of us would like for it to be data governance and data quality to be recognized as an important thing because it's an important thing. We understand that it is. And those many of those that are listening understand that it is. And we'd like for everybody to understand that it is. But really, what we've got is a situation where leadership only cares about data insofar as it's impacting AI and the AI projects. And when they go pear-shaped, because the data is not good or the your models are hallucinating or like Jennifer AI was, then they start to care about it. And frankly, I'm not sure I care why they care. I just care that they care.
That's the start.
Absolutely. So start taking advantage of it. And so this is a really positive development for those of us in the data industry. But I think beyond that, right, we're at the threshold of the most significant change in information management and data governance and analytics since the inventions of the relational database and SQL. And it's sort of an audacious statement, but I think that's really true because while we've seen a lot of AI in other areas, it's now starting to find its way into information management itself. So we're seeing some real change in our industry driven by AI, and that's tremendously exciting. Now, I've already talked about the recognition of the need for high-quality data to train AI models, and there's been some interesting work that's been done on the question of data quality and model accuracy and demonstrating the relationship between the accuracy of the training data and the accuracy of the model output and how even small variances in quality can have a significant impact on the model. You're seeing AI applied to data modeling. We talked about this a couple episodes ago with Laura Madsen, and we said that data modelers shouldn't have to start with a blank sheet of paper anymore. You're also seeing AI applied to metadata. I ran an experiment where I fed a computer program into ChatGPT and asked about the data generated by that program, and it goes and does it, right? It recognized the variables. It recognized what they were supposed to contain. It recognized their purpose. And that's really been the holy grail of metadata collection. Just feed AI the application code and have it figure out what's going on and what's supposed to contain. And we're approaching that, and it's going to be a huge benefit, and I'm very excited about the prospects there. Now, on the other hand, I've heard it said that AI is going to put information management folks out of job, and that's going to be true to some extent. But going back to data's anthropology, you're always going to need people. AI is only going to take you so far. You're only going to be able to go 80%. And those same experiments I talked about just now also found that there are errors and omissions in the models, and somebody has to understand the business, and somebody has to understand the applications to double check what's coming out the other side of these models. And so, yes, there's going to continue to be. It's like, you remember when we had these schema on read repositories come out, when Hadoop came out?
Data
and
what
was the when? And the big thing was that we were going to get rid of DBAs.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to need DBAs. Why do we need DBAs anymore? We're just going to have schema on read. We're going to put whatever data we need into these repositories, and DBAs are going to have to get trained, find something else to do. And what did we discover? Their role became even more important. Mm-hmm. Because if without that control, the data starts sprawling completely out of control. You need to have somebody there that understands the data in order to keep this monstrosity usable. So the exact opposite happened. I see the same thing happening in with AI, where there's the concern about it taking over people's jobs. But I think that it's going to make information management professionals' roles more important.
Yeah, I think, you know, I keep going back to the Industrial Revolution. Let me know what you think of this.
Yeah.
In the Industrial Revolution, and it happened again in the 1950s, when computers became dominant in business. And in fact, I have an old book I bought for a nickel at a garage sale years ago. And it's called Dealing with the Impending Problems of Automation. And it talks about how robots are going to take over and, you know, George Jetson was going to happen, right? George Jetson goes into the show, always begins with him putting his feet up on the console, tilting back and pushing a button. Day's work complete, right?
Yep.
And that's a lot of what you're hearing now is there's going to be George Jetsons above the cloud, and then under the cloud, there's just an unspeakable human dystopian horror. Okay. Yeah. The Industrial Revolution was, we're going to have all this great, 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 great stuff, and there won't be back-breaking work anymore, which was true, the steam engines and things like that. But people still needed to be involved because people had to deal with the ethical issues. Oh, we've got workers in the city now. What's this thing called? Sewage?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. You mean they need a place to live? I mean, you know, huge unintended consequences that require the people. And I think that's where the people are going to be needed, is those unintended consequences. It's easy to look at something and say the robots will do that. We've been doing that for 60 years.
Yep.
All right. It's the unintended consequences where the people are going to have to come in. But I don't know what that is.
Right. And well, and somebody's going to have to make sure that they're doing the right thing, that the models are putting out something that's reasonable, that's rational.
Yeah.
Because I see one of the biggest risks is people taking their hands off altogether. Because AI allows us, and maybe even encourages us, to be intellectually lazy. You know, making our own decisions takes work, and it's easier to let someone or something else decide for us, and just saying, let the AI do it, and whatever the AI says. You know, there's a whole movie, I don't know if you remember The Net, back from the 90s, I think it was the 90s with Sandra Bullock. Well, the computer says you're a terrorist, so therefore you must be, or whatever crime it was that she was being chased down for. The computer said it must be true.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. Cool stuff, man. We've got, I think our upcoming seasons are going to still have lots of stuff in them, aren't they?
Absolutely. No shortage of things to talk about.
Well, we have to do a couple other things here before we finish, because we're trying to make this episode also blessedly shorter for the listener.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's going to happen.
All right. Anyway, we need to, first of all, thank the other people that have been working with us. I will go down the list I have. And then, Mark, you should join in on your list of people that have been helping. First of all, the rock bottom players. We have had a whole bunch of people being other voices on our sketches. And I have had my adult children, Chris Ladley, Amy, Dr. Amy Ladley. We must put that in there because that cost a lot of Zords to get her there. My spousal unit, Pamela Thomas, and she rightly doesn't use my name because there's a lot of baggage there, I guess. I don't know. I also have two very close family friends that happen to be professionals. Yes, we have used professionals on this because we needed their help. We needed their guidance on how things should sound and stuff. And that would be Evan Galt and Casey Griffin. And they reside and perform as stand-up comedians in the Kansas City area. So look up Evan Christian Galt on YouTube and Casey Griffin with a G and K-A-S-E-Y. And look them up on YouTube. A, they're very funny people. They're extremely creative. But they also provided many of our voices during this series. Now, what about your your mob, sir?
Yeah, from this end, we've got my wife, Karen Showalter Cooper. She's a professional as well. She's an opera singer and has a couple of YouTube videos. And then also Jonathan Whited. Jonathan leaves for college this fall, so we're very excited for him. And we appreciate his and Karen's help this season. And finally, thanks to Zoe and Walter, who were the voices of Jennifer AI and Grant Patch, the employees of Consolidated Dynamics. And it seems only appropriate that their parts would be AI-generated.
Yep. Yeah. Amy, by the way, Dr. Amy Ladley is helping with the third edition of Data Governance now, and we'll be writing a portion of that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And Chris, a lot of people don't know this. My first book, the Enterprise Information Management book, is illustrated with very humorous cartoons. And my son Chris penned every one of those cartoons. He's besides being one of the best culinary experts in the St. Louis, Missouri area, he is a tremendous, in his spare time, artist. So
awesome.
And a special thank you to our sponsor for these first 20 episodes, Hubris Data Pros. There's no way we could have gotten this far without hubris. You might even say that it was hubris that carried us through. And a reminder that any resemblance to any events, persons, or businesses, living or dead, is purely coincidental. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered legal advice. Counter-Threaded Productions is not responsible for any losses, damages, or liabilities that may arise through the use of this podcast. Do not take the Rock Bottom Data Feed if you are allergic to the Rock Bottom Data Feed. The views expressed in this podcast may not be those of the hosts or the management. This podcast is not intended to replace professional medical advice. As you know, and hopefully everybody knows by now, we end all our interviews with the same two questions. So, John, here's the first. What person, alive or dead, related or not, has been most influential to you in your data career or life generally?
I'm going to focus on the data. Because if you fold life into it, it's going to be the aforementioned grandfather. All right. Mm-hmm. Most influential person in my life. If I want to bring in the professional aspect, I'm going to mention my economics professor from my undergraduate, the late Dr. Hans Senholz, Austrian, very Austrian, was a Luftwaffe fighter pilot during the war.
Wow.
As he said when he introduced himself, "I'm Professor Senholz and I was a bad guy." All right. I mean, that's how he would introduce himself. And, but he was a brilliant mind. If you Google him, there's books. Brilliant mind. But when you got to know him and you got to become immersed in it and you got to do some papers for him and think and sit and talk with him and all of that, one of the most practical, open-minded persons. And he left me with one phrase that I have applied day in and day out to this profession we're in. And his phrase was, where there is chaos, there is always opportunity. Do not run away from it. And I use that every day of my professional life. Now, there's all the other people that give me, you know, ethical things and behavior things and all of that. But if you just something that guides me, and when I was a developer years ago and was trying to figure out what to do in this technology career, which I got into only because of the money, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't know I was going to like it so much. But then I, in the back of my mind, I was looking around and I went, where's the chaos? The chaos is on the data side of this. You know, the applications development side is rigidly controlled by a bunch of talking heads and four or five big, what we used to call big five, big integrators. And in, you have to get the stature of a James Martin or a Admiral Hopper to make a change in this. But the data side, it's chaos. There's no one even thinking about it. And that's how I ended up in that. So yeah. Dr. Senholz.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about you?
Well, for me, and this was a hard question to think about, because I don't necessarily have a single person. You know, I've been kind of an amalgamation of the folks that I've come in contact with, that I've worked with, that I've read, family, you know, emulating my parents. You know, my mom was valedictorian in Phi Beta Kappa. And I remember I'm seeing her key, you know, the key pin, Phi Beta Kappa key pin, and wanting one of those for me. You know, my dad has been very successful on the university side. And so a lot to good examples and a lot to emulate there. And it all goes in the hopper. I'm a huge Tom Peters fan, learned a lot from a lot of other folks. You know, I had all the time I was at FedEx, I would have one of my annual objectives was to read four business or technical books. And sometimes my boss is like, well, you have a learning plan. But the learning plans were always optional. And your objectives were required, so to speak. And so sometimes it only counted for, 2 or 3% of my evaluation. But I think it was very important to keep reading and keep up with what's going on, to keep learning. I used to collect quotes on 3x5 note cards and tack them up on my cubicle wall. And I even had one from one of your articles back a long time ago. You said, life moves too fast for warm fuzzies. And now that I've gotten to know you, right, it makes perfect sense that you would say that.
Well, I'm not against warm fuzzies. I'm not against warm fuzzies, but where did I say that? I have to figure out what the context of that was. That could be interpreted as pretty dour.
Long time ago.
Yeah.
This was back in the 90s.
Well, I think what I meant from that is when you're doing something and you're trying to accomplish something and make progress, you don't wait till everything is done and everything's tied up in a neat bow and you have this warm, fuzzy feeling that here we are, look what we've done, right? You need to just move on, right?
Precisely.
Yeah. All right. We have another question. If you were a wizard, if you were Harry Potter and had a magic wand and could fix one thing in the data industry, totally fix it with one spell, so it's immediately fixed, what would it be?
It would be that corporate leadership and executives, CEOs, boards of directors really grasp how important it is to understand their data and to support and prioritize and fund those activities. And, you know, when you talk about a spell, right, your Harry Potter spell, it would really be easy to just say, poof, everybody understands the data, right? And everything nice and packaged and organized and all. But the thing is, you know, that would just be a one-time spell. And everything would then start to fall apart immediately, right? This is an ongoing activity. This isn't something that you do once. It's not a project that you do once and then you're done with it and go on, you know, have your chicken lunch and go on to something else. What I would like to see is that understanding at the executive level of the importance of understanding the data and doing the things that are required to actually make that happen at companies.
Yeah.
How about yourself?
Exactly the same. I would like to go poof, and all of a sudden the board and the CEO go, we're really missing the boat on this. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't be delegating this. I need to understand a little bit more. I mean, I have an article coming out with Malcolm Hawker, who was one of our guests here in about a month. And what we say is leadership, like CEO board, that level has to be an inch deep and a mile wide in everything.
Yep.
And we have to add data to that bucket of knowledge. All right. And yep. Right now they're not an inch deep. They don't even know. They don't even know. So I think we're saying the same thing. Okay.
Yep. Exactly.
You know what time it is now then?
It is time for game show.
Audio Rorschach test. Right.
We can't get away without playing this ourselves.
Yeah, we can't do that. Let's see here. I'm going to share computer audio. There we go.
Okay.
All right, Mark, I'm going to play a song for you, and I want you to pick a number between 1 and Google. And I will randomly select a song, which means I'm going to pick whatever the hell I want to for him. And we will go from there. Of course, you know what to do, right? What is your immediate reaction, like a Rorschach test? What is your immediate reaction to what it is your senses perceive? Okay?
Got it.
Give me a number between 1 and Google.
Google. 12.
Okay, we're going to the low end here. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Here we go.
All right. The first thing that I envision when I hear that is a newly formed data governance team marching down the hall at headquarters, going to present the results of their data governance, establishing a data governance program, and going to present it to the executives. And you can see them all walking down the hall in wedge formation. You know, the person in the front with a laptop under their arm, ready to plug in and subject everybody to this new data governance plan.
Okay, profound. Do you have any? You have some music on your side, correct?
Yep. I need you to pick a number from 1 to 10.
14.
14. Okay. We'll loop over. And all right, here we go.
What I'm thinking is what I immediately reminded of was, you know, an abandoned warehouse or factory with people getting nervously out of their limousines in the middle of the night to deal with some nefarious high-risk transaction. So that's very, very much like the first time you go to leadership and want to sell some sort of formalization of data. Okay, you don't know if you're going to come out of the meeting with some money or you're capped. Okay, you know, you're never sure. It's that thing that I don't know if they're going to listen to me or they're going to say your proposition's terrible and drop this dude in the river. I mean, that's kind of where I got from there. So I imagine myself wearing like a leather coat with a really big revolver stuck in it, you know. And a whole bunch of really mean-looking goth kind of guys standing behind me.
Down at the old warehouse at the waterfront.
Yeah, on the north side. On the north side.
Yeah.
Near Permanis. Yeah, near Permanis.
Exactly. Exactly. There we have it.
Well, there we have it. Another season in the can. When will we be back? We'll be back in September, correct?
That's correct.
With a new season, some slight adjustments to formats.
And some new features and guests we're very excited about, including, yes,
a new sponsor.
And as always, the best content, in our most humble opinions. So until next time, this has been
John Ladley
and Mark Cooper for the Rock Bottom Data Feed. Thanks for listening, and remember, when you're here, you've reached rock bottom. You can find more information about the topics covered in this episode, the fuss about your hosts, at our website, rockbottomdatafeed.com. The Rock Bottom Data Feed is a Counter-Threaded production, copyright 2025, all rights reserved.